I mean, it's racist, right?
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Molly Glover, Nick Glover, and Tim Wick.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we talk with guest Joshua Humphrey. He tells us what he can about the law, because he just graduated from law school.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I am your host, Molly Glover, joined as always by my co-hosts, Tim Wick.
I might be going to jail.
And Nick Glover.
I'm probably not going to jail.
We'll cycle back to that in a moment. And our guest today is the incomparable Joshua Humphrey. Hi, Joshua.
Welcome to me. I can't represent either of you yet.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
How about going to jail, Tim? Is that just a lawyer reference?
Well, it's just, I mean, I speed a lot.
Oh,
I could do a lot of speed. I could go to jail for that, couldn't I?
Tim's a speed
dealer. Well, I guess,
dealer.
You know what we should do? We should ask newly graduated law student Joshua Humphrey.
Oh, that was a nice
Because that's
trend.
Why he's here.
That was a good question.
I would have to refer you to an actually practicing lawyer and not somebody who has just recently graduated
that's
from
like
law
the
school.
The first thing they teach you in law school is like, you're not a lawyer yet.
Yeah. All the times people have been messaging me in the last few months being like, oh, Josh, can you help me with this legal problem? Well, this is my, just remember, I'm not a lawyer.
Yeah.
This is what I think you should do, but really talk to a lawyer.
I can help you academically with your legal problem.
Like, this is what I think, and this is how I would argue it, but I'm not a lawyer.
So this exactly. is my first question that I'm just right yeah. now. So I know you have to take the bar to be a lawyer. Do you have to go to law school to take the bar?
In Minnesota, I believe you have to have gone to an accredited
yeah,
ABA institution.
Sure.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
It varies by jurisdiction, but I think that is mostly phased out almost
yeah.
everywhere, unless you're like... Yeah, unless you can find some sort of exemption somewhere. I think they exist, but it's very rare.
That's the weirdest. So that's, I think, one of the weirdest things. We have a friend who's a lawyer, and she was talking about she's trying to find other work, you know, from where she works now. And we were talking about, you know, maybe other countries or other states because of, you know, health insurance and things. And it's so difficult when you are an attorney to find work in other states because you have to pass their bar.
Yeah.
And you can't. And so we have a there's no federal bar exam.
No.
Which,
well, there is for like patent attorneys and stuff
okay.
like that, but not like for just like across the board. There's no
yeah.
there's now a uniform bar exam, which a lot of states have like gotten on board of, but that's like half of the states. And they all have different score requirements.
Yeah, yeah.
But even if it's uniform, don't you still have to take it?
You still have to take it.
So yep. if they had the uniform bar exam in Minnesota, where we are recording, and they had the same uniform bar exam in, say, Iowa,
mm-hmm.
You would still have to take the bar exam in Iowa to be able to practice law in Iowa, correct?
I think, I'm not 100% sure. I know in...
What the hell good are you?
Sorry, Tim. Iowa, I don't know specifically, but like for here, I'm taking the uniform bar exam. I have to get a score of 260 to pass the Minnesota bar exam.
Mm-hmm.
I can then use that score in any other state who's also done the uniform bar exam or gone on to the uniform bar exam to get into their bar. There's probably still like an application that I have to fill out.
And probably pay somebody something.
Exactly.
But that would be like you could take the test in Minnesota because you're going to be living in Illinois, for example. I don't know if that's like, let's say they have the same.
Alaska is a uniform bar state.
Alaska. So let's say you're going to go move to Alaska in 4 months. So you're going to take the Minnesota bar,
mm-hmm.
and then you can maybe apply to transfer that to Alaska. But you couldn't apply it to Minnesota and Alaska equally.
I can apply it to both, I think, if my score is the minimum for what they require. Alaska's score is 280, so I have to get a higher score.
So you have to get a higher score.
So we have worse lawyers.
Interestingly, though, like Alaska's, I had to take another test last year, which is the MPRE, which is the ethics exam.
Yeah.
Basically not sleeping with your clients.
Okay.
Essentially, making sure that you understand that rule and how to deal with money. Alaska's score for that is lower.
What if your clients are super hot, though? Can you sleep with them then?
If you had slept with them before they became your client, you're in the clear.
Mm-hmm.
What if they stop being your client?
I'd have to look up the actual rules for that.
What you're saying is attractiveness has nothing to do with whether or not it's ethically okay to sleep with your client.
So if
let's go look at California's rules. I'm sure they have some exceptions.
If a potential client walked into your office and they were extremely attractive, and you said, "I would like to have sex with you before I decide if you'll be my client," that's okay.
I think that is more permissible under the rules.
That's why all those noirs work.
Oh my gosh.
All right. If you can tell us, where did you go to school?
I went here, Mitchell Hamlin. School of Law. When I started, it was William Mitchell. William Mitchell.
William Mitchell's where my mom went and my father.
That's been around since like 1900, back when it was St. Paul College of Law something.
Did they merge with Hamlin?
They did. The legal profession has been in some dire straits since the recession. A lot of people have lost their job, especially in big law. I think it's really affected big law and big firms.
Law.
And so that there was that. And so a lot of people were scared off of going to law school for several years. And so enrollment was down.
Sure.
And so Hamlin had a low enrollment. Mitchell had a low enrollment. They eventually decided to merge. I think Hamlin wanted to get rid of their College of Law because it was sort of like a subsidiary school. I'm not sure how they were incorporated exactly, but they decided to merge. And there was a long, agreement between the schools about how to merge. It was a nightmare.
I wonder which lawyers got tapped to work that out.
Oh, I can't even imagine what the faculty had to go through to figure out who was in and who was out.
Paper, rock, scissors.
I was in this last year. I was part of the Student Bar Association, which is just kind of we administer student fees and how student money is kind of arranged to organizations on campus.
Did you have
campus.
To pass a student bar exam to be a member of
the
student?
Funny story. I was a writing candidate. A bunch of people wrote me in, and I got onto the Student Bar Association.
Joshua, are you popular?
I don't want to toot my own horn. It is the mustache. It's a trademark.
Did you be like, "Well, you know, if I got written in, I'd serve"?
No, I didn't do that. a bunch of people told me they were going to write me in, and I was like, "Oh, okay. If I get written in, I'll accept it." And like a couple other people were like, "Oh, yeah, I'll just write you in," and that's how it happened.
That's super cool.
It was neat, but it was also a lot of work to like represent your actual constituents.
Sure, especially during this. When did the merger happen?
And so the merger. It happened, I think, a couple years ago now, about midway through my college experience. And one of the things that we had to deal with as a student bar association was merging the student bar associations from Hamlin and Mitchell. And so that was there was two constitutions and they had to be merged. And there was two student bar association bodies that had to be merged and figured out. And that's still an ongoing
Hamlin's
process.
Hamlin students are fuckers. I'm a graduate.
High five.
Yeah.
So
this was my brother and my mom.
My joke was
I tried to get away from Hamlin and I went to Mitchell and then they pulled me back in because of the merger. They went after me specifically.
I used to joke, my mother went to St. Kate's for her undergrad and my biological father went to St. Thomas, and that's where they met. Was she was a Katie, he was a Tommy, right? If you're not from Minnesota, you don't understand. This is a gross love story of just college whatevers. But so I went to St. Kate's and joined the theater department, which was in conjunction with St. Thomas.
Oh, sure.
So I ended up going to both schools, really, and it was super weird.
I
just want to point out right now, a gross story of college whatevers is my Tears for Fears cover band.
I love it.
St. Thomas School of Law. I don't want to say anything disparaging about a fellow law school, but I think their motto is faith in the law or something.
Very, St. Thomas is super, it's much more Catholic. St. Kate's is Catholic, but also feminist, which sometimes those clash, and feminism usually feminism trumps over the Catholicism.
I grew up literally three blocks from St. Thomas University. My mother still lives there now. And because one of their one of the things they're really known for is a business school.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a super conservative campus right in the middle of a super liberal neighborhood, which is fascinating the way that whole thing works together. And yes, indeed, it's run by the Catholic Church, and so there's that whole piece of the puzzle.
It's just like a building that churns out neocons, right? conservative, young, upstanding conservative men.
The type.
I would say. It's actually, I think St. Thomas is co-ed and has been for a long time
It is. Yeah.
But, Back when my father and mother went there, it was not. So it was the boys' school and the girls' school.
It also...
Let's teach you how to put money over people.
Like, yeah.
I feel like they keep a pretty low profile, though, because any kind of, like, student, like, activity that, like, is newsworthy tends to come out of the U, it
or
seems
Augsburg.
Like.
That's true. Yeah, yeah, yeah,
St.
True.
Thomas is pretty quiet. They also do have a seminary. You can become a Catholic priest there, which is great because, I mean, there are a lot of kids in the neighborhood, so that helps. And,
So, hey, Joshua.
Yes.
Yes,
Molly.
What was your favorite class?
My favorite class, if I had to pick one.
Yeah.
I really, like, I wish I got more into con law liberties and con law powers over
Why
the course of I love those classes. Well,
what,
I mean,
what in today's modern
what
world
in today's
could
modern
possibly
world,
make you wish I tried, you studied more con law?
I tried to, well, in the last semester, we tried to organize like a monthly kind of like, this is what's happening under Trump. Like, because it's like every day was a new like political slash law event that was happening. And like, it was really good for like, I thought it was really good teachable.
Please
moment.
Don't use the past tense. It's still happening.
It's still happening. Yeah. It's still happening.
Hey, by the time this comes out, right? Fingers crossed.
Although a federal judge enjoined the travel ban 3.0 yeah. today in Hawaii, I believe. Yeah, so I haven't read much about it, but.
Just read that.
Yeah.
So
con law is constitutional law.
Yeah, that's okay. constitutional
law. I know a lot of our listeners are probably thinking it was like convention law.
Well, con artist law.
Oh, that'd be great. Yeah.
I wish I'd taken a couple more freedom of speech classes just to understand those issues more. It's because guess what? It's coming up every day,
sure.
really.
Mm-hmm.
And more immigration, more
yeah.
everything. But immigration, I mean, that's a huge section of the law. It's like, unless you want to go into that, it's
right.
like... Why not? Why just take one class? You'd have
it's
to take a whole bunch of class.
In.
Yeah,
it's too deep of a pool.
It's a deep pool, I think, and constantly changing. Health law is constantly changing. I took a couple health law, like public health law, and just regular compliance law, and that's also like a huge, like deep pool that you can spend a lot of time diving into because it's just so much of it. Right?
Yeah.
And a lot of it's very dry.
So at law school, do they encourage you to go like deep on a specialty, or are you trying to be more inches deep and miles wide and kind of like shotgun attack, you know, hit
My
everything?
Focus was toward the end a lot more on intellectual property.
Mm-hmm.
I took trademark and copyright and patent to kind of get more of a depth of that. And I wish I'd started a little earlier on that. Most of my law school career, it was kind of whimsical almost. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you should go to law school and go with a whimsical bent. But I tended to go where my interests laid.
Sure.
And then also to try to make sure that I was ticking off boxes for the bar exam, because like a lot of classes are required just for the bar, like evidence and criminal procedure and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Standard stuff, estates.
Like, yeah.
And what else? Family law. I didn't do any family law because... You will learn family law for the bar exam, basically.
Oh. Sure.
And I wish I'd gotten into more business law, too, just to, like, help people, because people are starting businesses all the time.
Sure.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What do you know what you want to do once you pass the bar?
Right now, I'm really trying to figure out whether I want to stay where I am. I work in intellectual property kind of right now, and I'm trying to decide whether I want to shift into a more intellectual property career or if I want to go work for the state. I clerked last summer with Judge John Hoyos, who works at the 4th District Court in Hennepin, and that was great. Depressing sometimes, but great, because he was dealing with like criminal law a lot. And but for some reason that summer, there was just a spat of sexual assault cases. And he was like, oh, I'm so sorry that we have these cases. But like, I'm just so sorry. And great man, really nice judge. I loved him. He was fantastic.
Explain for our listeners what clerking is, because I think.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
So there's. In a clerking experience, the judge is, of course, running the courtroom, but he needs assistance to do that. And usually the clerks are the one doing that. And the clerks do a lot of the research for the judge. They do a lot of writing for the judge and like putting together like an opinion that the judge kind of directs. Judges don't always sit down and write an opinion, but especially at the district court level, that's a lot of that's done by the clerks. But the judges will then like read that, make changes to it, do stuff like that. And I didn't write like extensively, but I wrote something that the judge read, and then I don't know if he ever like used that whole thing for his opinion or what, because I was gone by the time they even decided the thing. But like I was happy to like work on that for the judge, and it was something that I thought was really cool. And it was a Fourth Amendment issue, which is search and seizure and a phone issue too, which is like hot stuff. It's really interesting.
Yeah, that's very topical right now.
When you do research, are you researching case law or are you researching current events? I mean, like what?
It'll be case law.
Just case law and looking for precedent?
Oh, yeah. It'll be case law and looking for precedent. So that, like the issue that I worked on at court was a Minnesota Fourth Amendment issue. So you had to look at not only what the federal courts were doing in terms of Fourth Amendment law, what had been decided at the state level and what by the Supreme Court or the appellate court for regarding like Fourth Amendment search and seizure. And that was really fun and cool. And like my friend is like really – he works at the Court of Appeals now, but he's really into like the Fourth Amendment, wrote like a 20,000-word like article on the Fourth Amendment like, for his long paper topic. Yeah.
20,000 pages. That's a Russian
novel. He's verbose.
That's not an opinion.
Dostoevsky loved the Fourth Amendment.
Yeah. Also guns, apparently.
But I really liked clerking, and I kind of want to go back to that. But I don't know if I want to have a career, because like when you would go into clerking, you're probably going to like work for the state for the rest of your life.
Okay.
Like you get a job as a prosecutor, you get a job as a defense attorney, or not necessarily the state. You would like clerk for a while, and then maybe go into criminal practice or some other kind of civil like tort practice. Mm-hmm. Really depends.
Do you in intellectual property law, is there a lot of did you have to put in the normal like long hours that an associate does? That's something that I remember hearing a lot from my parents. The 70 to 100 hour work weeks that associates have to put through to try to.
I've never worked for a firm.
Sure.
So like that is something that I've heard associates have to do because the firm will try to break you in the first 5 years. They want to get work out of you, and two, they want to know if you'll stick around for the long haul, and finally they just want to use you as much as possible.
It's something that I saw firsthand as a kid with my mom because she was working for a firm, and we didn't see her much.
Being a doctor,
because after 5 years you're a lot more expensive, I assume, and they want to make sure that they get as much work out of you when you're young and hungry and can't just pick where you work.
That's precisely it.
Yeah.
And like where I am right now with my job that I have, it's a fairly good job. And I could be in it for the next 10, 20, for the rest of my life if I wanted to.
That's great.
Which is good, but like I don't know if it's going to feed me for that long either.
That's understandable.
Especially since I'm like I can feel like my interests are kind of like diverging, and like I need to make a decision about where I want to go next and if I want to change my career. And I've given thought to like just leaving the state and going somewhere else, which is one of the reasons to take the uniform bar exam.
Sure. Did learning more about the law make you more confused? From when you went into school?
I think what is very useful for getting any kind of legal education is you get an education not only in the law, you get an education in like the history of the law. Somebody was telling me that they were taught American history through Supreme Court opinions in just their high school. And I was like, wow, that seems like a great way to learn about American history because it's always like these flashpoints, right? Mm-hmm, you got Korematsu like during World War I. You got Brown before Board of Education. Mm-hmm. You get all these civil rights cases. And really like those big cases are really like the peaks of movements a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. They're not necessarily completely representative of a period of time.
Oh, yeah.
But they're a great like touchstone for those points in time, especially like Brown v. Board of Education or what's the one about Shelby County v. Holder. No, I'm thinking of another one. But like you can learn so much about American like law and history just through the Supreme Court opinions. Exactly. And so I think back to the point where we were talking about, I wish everybody could go to law school at least for like a period of time because like you learn all the, and it'd be really useful right now because people think they know the law and think they know the history of the country, but usually they're just talking out of their ass.
Yeah.
But what you were saying before about the Fourth Amendment, which is like search and seizure.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a lot in the Fourth Amendment.
Yeah, right.
It's a huge amendment.
Is super relevant for technology right now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the government's talking about requiring people to use ethical forms of encryption, which is their term for encryption that the government has a key to and
can break in anytime they want to.
Yeah, in case of needing to get into someone's phone for some
in case we have an emergency.
Right, right. Because that key could never be sold or passed along or misplaced or hacked.
There's no world where our government breaks down and we live in a dystopian nightmare where that sort of information is freely given.
Right, and how your phone and electronics get treated when you travel and things like that. Like it's super serious stuff, and it's all very. The way the technology is developing and the way the companies that are developing that sort of encryption and stuff is handled is bumping up against the government like really hard right now.
Yeah, and I know I think the Supreme Court has a case, a cell phone case, this term. And like this is a very interesting term for the court because Gorsuch is on for a full term and you get to see like how he's going to move in various directions.
Ooh.
But like I think that like the technology problem that we're facing, right? Like a few years ago, it was just like, yeah, the internet, technology is going to save us as a species. And now I'm like, oh, geez.
What have we done?
we're doomed.
Joshua, you identify as godless, yes?
Yes, I do.
And so was it difficult in law school? Did it come up at all? Were there situations where you as an atheist felt like weird?
The one time that I felt like very kind of like as like a target was on my back was during one of these sessions where we organized Trump and the Constitution. Mm-hmm. And a full-blown Trumper who was a law student came to that. And like, I don't...
Post-election?
It was post-election. And probably in like March-ish, May-ish.
Yeah.
Between March or April. March or April. And like we were having a pleasant discussion about the law. And then like you get into like just the weird fantasy land that a lot of mm-hmm. Trumpers are living in. Mm. I mean, when someone says like in meat space, in real space, that's like, oh yeah, I was shit posting peppy memes, and I'm just like, oh my gosh.
So,
this is actually happening right in front of me.
God.
But we're talking about, and like, and I think his perspective was too, he was like heavily Roman Catholic. Mm-hmm. So you get that whole perspective mm-hmm. too. And like, you know, cozying up with the Russians doesn't seem so bad to me, that sort of talk. And I'm like, oh. And like the guy who we asked to, one of the professors who we asked to like spearhead this, he was like, well, have you thought about that in terms of like the actual geopolitical like reality that we're living in about what Russia wants to accomplish in the world, what they want to do? And the guy was like, I hadn't thought about that far ahead.
Of course.
Because, you know, with the election, everybody goes to their little sidelines, right? And he was on the sideline of his guy.
Yeah.
That was one of the times I've ever felt like weirded out. But like for the most part, like there's tons of different like faith backgrounds in law mm-hmm. school, like whether like it's Catholic, it's Muslim, mm-hmm. etc. They're there. And so like it was a very really open like place and open for discussion, I think, most parts. And I think most classes I remember criminal procedure specifically, and we were talking about like police like brutality and like procedure in line with like search and seizure with like cars and stuff like that. And the professor at the beginning of like I think one of the first couple of classes was like, we're going to touch on things in this class that might be triggering points for a lot of people. Like, we're here to have a discussion, mm-hmm. and so we'll have a discussion.
It's college,
yeah. Right? And it was just very frank and open for the most part.
So I wanted to ask, mm-hmm. because, you know, I've had this conversation with other people. Your professor said at the beginning of the class that there might be some conversations that would be about triggering topics. And then did he not?
I would say triggering was the word that I used. He used much
he
more.
He said maybe sensitive topics or topics that might make you uncomfortable,
mm-hmm.
but essentially gave a trigger warning at the beginning of the class. And did that like curtail any conversation?
No, in fact, I think what it did, and I think he made this emphasize, we're going to talk about these things. Mm-hmm. So I want you to make sure that when someone has a comment about these topics, not to like react like in one direction or another. Listen to what that person's saying, and then you'll get your turn to like actually react to.
Huh. So you felt like it didn't hurt your college experience any?
No.
Okay.
I don't think so.
Because I've heard some people expressed concern that it would do that.
Yeah. No, it didn't seem to.
Huh.
Well, in this instance, it didn't, and I think a lot of people do want it to be like a problem. Like, but I think like we're also in a school of lawyers, and so like everybody is going to be as much like professional as possible for the most part.
Also, law school is adults. I mean, like, there's no argument about the fact that the youngest you are in going into law school is 22. Right? Most of the time, I would say, unless you're a wunderkind and you're in there at like 21 or 20 or something. But so by and large, it's either, you know, people who have left college, worked a bit, gone back to school, or they are, and as opposed to the college atmosphere that I know this whole trigger warning thing kind of comes from, is this 18 to 22 year olds who are, they're kids, man. They're teenagers.
They're raging. Their hormones are raging.
And they're going to be acting crazier than
first
than
taste of freedom.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. So I just had I had another question. I'm trying to remember what it was. I'm so sorry. It was related to
While you think of that, did that answer your question, Tim? Do you feel satisfied?
It satisfied my curiosity.
Like,
at least where law school is concerned.
I really want to emphasize that we were really in a very open like mm-hmm. environment for talking about it, and we were told to respect everybody's opinion, even if those things were like triggering to us. Like,
right,
to use that mm-hmm. terminology.
Mm-hmm. So what I remember what it was. What in your life made you decide to go to law school?
A lot of it was for my job, like because I'm dealing with a lot of compliance issues and mm-hmm.
Damn it! My computer.
Yeah, I was gonna say I hit your face.
He's like, no compliance, thanks. I want everyone to hate my life.
Yeah. And administrative law and stuff like mm-hmm. that, which is, and like health law, because I work at a medical research foundation. Mm-hmm. And so like dealing with those issues, we needed somebody on staff who was willing to kind of like dig into a lot of those. And my job said like, hey, if you go to law school, we'll support you a little bit.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's really nice.
It was very nice.
Yeah.
Up to the taxable amount, I think is what it was.
Is there a requirement is there a requirement like, you need to use that degree that you got with your company for a certain amount of time before you look for work outside the company?
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Okay.
Mine was a year.
All right. So not bad at all.
No, it was pretty good. Like, and I am incredibly appreciative of the help that they gave me to go through that mm-hmm. process, because I don't know if I might have done it without them. Because I might have just decided, like, okay, I want something different with my life.
Yeah.
But, like, they gave me really that kind of push to do it.
That's great.
I would encourage anybody who's thinking about law school to go into law school with a nice concrete plan.
Whether or not that plan is whimsical, at least
yes,
you know
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel just one more thing before we go into five questions. I don't know, you may have seen that recently. Coming up in December, when the Supreme Court, you know, starts to meet and gets mm-hmm. Starts to plan, is the Christian anti-gay cake case.
Oh,
the guy, the baker.
What's
the
big shop?
Yeah,
can't remember the whole name.
The baker who refused to make cakes for gay couples, who also said he would refuse to make cakes depicting drug use or sexual like explicitness, because that's also against his religion. So the church, not the Church of Satan, that's different. The Satanic Temple, Lucius Greaves has been encouraging its members to call up bakers and ask them to make Satanist cakes, because they shouldn't violate their religious beliefs in that they are also religious and protected class, whereas LGBTQIA people are not right now. So at least in the...
I've seen that news.
Yes. So I realize you are not an attorney and nor are you on the Supreme Court. How do you see this going down? Like, is this satanic? Can he be forced to make satanic cakes? Are they going to protect our fellow lovely LGBTQI people as protected to make it easier?
Gosh, I hope the court decides to like respect the law and like, I mean, like in terms like. I don't know much about the like merits of that case, nor the like really in-depth parts of the law that the court is going to be deciding. But like in terms of like allow like every like business right should be open to everybody, right?
Right.
That is my hope. Yeah. That's what I hope the court will decide and fall down upon.
Yeah.
And I don't know too much about like the Satanists and their and them asking for the yeah. cakes and everything, but that's like I laugh that the Satanist temple is yeah. doing some interesting advocacy work.
They really yeah. are. Like they really with their protected status as a religion, they are doing some really great work.
And I think that's needed because I don't think necessarily like atheists have like the best argument to kind of like go against like people.
We aren't a religion.
We aren't right. a religion.
We do not have a protected status. Protected,
we don't. Yeah. And so like you need somebody with like sort of an opposing protected status to like go after those things and be mm-hmm. like, hey, like, you know, we are a protected class as well. Mm-hmm. So like if you're applying the law equally.
Yeah.
This should apply to us as well.
Well, I find the term deeply held religious belief just horrifying. The idea that somebody could essentially do anything they want
yeah.
if they can show that their religion permits it.
I just really like the idea
of... smoke weed.
Yeah. I like the idea of, hey, really nice... Yeah, you can't smoke... You can't say you're a Rastafarian and therefore yeah. you should be legally allowed to smoke weed yep. in this country. That's the one thing that they... It's kind of amazing.
Class
and Native American religions one. Where they yeah. won't let them do anything.
Well, I feel like... But I feel like if the Supreme Court ruled that you could do something if you could show that you had a deeply held religious belief, that would just open it. I mean, it's not a slippery slope argument.
There'd just be a lot more religious people.
Yeah. Well, sure, but there would be.
You're going to see a lot of different religious organizations cropping up.
That Native Americans could go. Well, then we can smoke peyote because it is part of our religion, and there's nothing you can do about it.
You're adorable.
And like
this is you know just speculation, but like yeah. you could get like to the point where you know you have religiously backed super PACs that are doing yeah. like right. looking for exemptions
we
and also like affecting. No, definitely not. Right? No,
you could use peyote however you fucking use peyote. Anyway.
But that's a worry, and it's a legitimate one. We yeah. want the law applied yeah. equally to everybody, and people who are getting religious exemptions through yeah. like their deeply held religious belief is troubling because, like, what is my deeply held religious belief? It's what I tell you it is.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And you can't, and much like the ADA, you can't tell me that I'm not disabled. Like, so you can't tell me that what I'm doing isn't my religious belief, in a way. Like, if I tell you this is part of my religion, and it's very difficult to prove it's not. And much like with a disability, if I say I'm disabled, you can't ask me why or how, or, you know, as an employer, you can't say, oh, tell me what your disability is. Like, nope, don't have to. Like, I don't have to prove it to anybody necessarily. Then there's certain steps you do, but like, yeah, it is a fun time to be a brand new baby lawyer.
It's a fun time. It's a fun time.
Brand new baby, not lawyer.
Brand new baby, not lawyer.
Brand new baby, almost lawyer.
Almost yeah. lawyer.
He's so close.
February.
I believe he's standing up and he's holding the furniture. He's walking along. He's just not walking on his own yet.
Just remember, not everybody passes the bar the first time, but I expect Joshua will.
Well, it's my mustache.
You can write answers in the mustache.
Yeah. This is the first time my mustache has come up, actually.
I brought it up before.
Oh, yeah, you did.
I find it enchanting. It's a highly waxed mustache, and it is
very curly.
I started it the first November of law school during Movember, I think.
Yeah.
It's your law school mustache.
And now it's with me because everybody knows me.
What wax do you use?
Brother's Love. Which I think is a weird little name for a mustache wax.
It is. Just some brother's love.
Like my daddy's boy. That's not a thing.
Yeah. But it's like a hazelnut and it smells nice.
Oh, okay. Very yeah. nice.
I've got a little tin of Firehouse at home that I don't...
Oh, yeah. I have some Firehouse.
Yeah,
hey.
Waxing... Not so much for me.
Your mustache isn't super long. Your beard is your...
I've had some corners that were... I got to keep them trimmed, otherwise they go in my mouth.
Yeah.
Like just, yeah.
That's what mustaches wax
that's
all
the big.
About.
That's the big
that
problem
keeps
is...
it out of your mouth.
All right,
in
you
mouth.
Know what? It's five, five questions.
What
is it?
Five questions.
Hit us up with question number one.
Question number one is, what conspiracy theory do you find most interesting or compelling?
Most interesting or compelling, you know, we were talking about this beforehand mm-hmm. because I was having trouble trying to figure out which one I find the most interesting or compelling. And you brought up an interesting one. Could you explain it again? I'm throwing the question back at you.
I think this was Greg
Layden's
answer.
I think you're right.
In part, but it's shows like Cops mm-hmm. or even maybe to some extent, you know, SVU, and things like that went through a boom as a way of desensitizing people to the totalitarianism of like police.
And to a certain extent, I think I could buy into that.
Right.
If like if I watched those kind of shows with any kind of regular basis, right? And to a certain extent, those other shows, the legal shows, right? Because I think they're like, I think they're indoctrinating people to a certain extent about a certain type of law and how it's practiced. Because like a part of law school has been to like also like, because a lot of law students come in with those shows in mind in their head and like how law is going to be done. And like a lot of the problems in law, sometimes we talk about like juries expect everybody to be like really dramatic.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, like what is it? Phoenix Wright, Ace Attorney, sure. Like yes. In the courtroom.
Objection.
Yeah. They expect stuff like that. And that doesn't happen.
Jack McCoy dumped like 500 bullets out onto the table. He's like, he modified his gun. So instead of firing 4 bullets a minute and he drops 4 bullets, it fired 500 bullets a minute. It's like, instead it's like a beige room where people talk in low voices and then it's just over.
And those dramatic moments happen.
Oh yeah.
John Wayne Gacy's lawyer, like the serial killer, told this story about the prosecutor at the closing argument.
John Wayne Gacy's lawyer was a serial killer?
No. John Wayne Gacy, his lawyer.
Yeah.
John Wayne Gacy, the serial killer, his lawyer.
Sorry.
It's all right. It's all right. Yeah. But like anyway, the prosecutor was telling like he was giving his closing argument, and there was a picture of like the crawl space of where John Wayne Gacy tossed all the boys that he murdered.
All the bits down. That he didn't cut off.
Yeah, exactly. And the prosecutor had like 23 photos or something in his hands, and the prosecutor threw them against the crawl space and said to the jurors, like, I want you to treat John Wayne Gacy just as he treated those boys that he threw into that crawl space. And it was, and the defending attorney was like, "Oh, I knew I was toast at that point."
Yeah, not before that when they're
he was toast anyway. He was toast anyway.
That's where I'm in the jury, and I'm like, he killed women too.
The last week tonight, John Oliver's show recently brought up the shows like SVU and NCIS or whatever are giving people in the jury a very unrealistic expectation for the accuracy of things like DNA results.
For any forensic evidence.
A lot of bite mark
analysis.
Bite marks especially, yeah.
And so it's. I totally believe that stuff can absolutely change.
Did he talk about the recent case then where like tons of forensic evidence was just found to be false?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's probably what instigated the story.
Executed in death mm-hmm. row and you know.
And in hindsight, they're like, "Oops, that wasn't real."
Yeah, and I don't know if there's any repercussions for those people that did that.
But
maybe a civil suit.
And I don't know if that's a conspiracy. That could just be convenient entertainment getting.
Maybe
in
they get.
But yeah.
Maybe they get reincarnated as a rich person. I don't know. Anyway, question number two.
Yeah, no, question number two.
Life is real, and it's not.
Oh shit! All right, question number two. What is your perfect 2-week vacation? Money is no object, but physics is a limiting factor.
I lived in Okinawa for 3 years, and I would love to go back to Okinawa for 2 weeks to see everybody that I knew when I lived there, to reconnect and scope out places for a house.
Ooh.
Sure.
Why did you live there?
I lived there as part of the JET program.
Yeah.
Which was, I served as a Japanese assistant teacher of English to a Japanese English teacher.
Very cool.
And I got to go into various, like, I think I taught from like kindergarten, first grade level, all the way up to like ninth grade level.
And that'd be so fun.
They were adorable. They were great. They were fantastic. I loved all those
kids. What are their feelings about the Karate Kid in Okinawa?
It's the birthplace of karate. I don't know if you knew that.
Well, it is.
The empty hand way.
Yeah. Okay, anyway.
I didn't do a wide-reaching survey about their opinions on Karate Kid.
It's frowned upon for a gaijin to ask children about the Karate Kid.
did they do the crane technique there? Never mind.
I had an exchange student stay with us for a year when I was in high school. And had a bunch of friends go over to Sophia, which is the U of M sister school.
Oh, sure. Okay.
For studying there as a part of the exchange. They were studying their degree was in Japanese. So they like pain and 5,000 characters to read a newspaper.
We have a very big population of Japanese Americans that are living in Minnesota and they're part of that community. And I think there's a school in the St. Cloudish area where a lot of exchange students come over. A lot of it came after, of course, like World War II. A lot of Japanese women came over with American GIs and settled, I think, kind of in the Hopkins-ish area a lot. And so I've been out there for Japan, American Society, something, something, various events out there because they do an event every year or so.
I just want to say Mr. Miyagi said he was from Okinawa. That's why I'm bringing it up. Yeah.
I believe that actor, though, not Okinawan or Japanese.
No.
Pat Morita?
Mr. Miyagi.
No, I know.
Anyway.
All right, question three. What is a movie or book that changed your life?
Can I do two books?
Yes.
So I was thinking about this morning, and it's mainly to pander to you, I think. I think the first book that I think affected me positively was It. Because I just wanted to talk about It.
Yes, you did.
Because I thought the movie adaptation was great. But the book, like, I've read that book several times, listened to the audiobook.
The audiobook's great.
Audiobook is great. Don't listen to it aloud, though. Like,
no. I did the same thing. I was, like, driving down Eden Prairie with my window down, listening to It, and blah, 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 blah. Oop, window's up. Window's like, up.
Yep. Talking about the black spot, throwing out the N-word every other
it's
word.
It's just like, oof.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
it really puts a, like, when you're reading the book, you can kind of gloss over Richie's stuff. But then, like, when it's actually said aloud, I just can't imagine. I would love to see the casting meeting with Stephen Weber. So, Stephen Weber, can you do your best, like, horrible caricature?
Yeah, I wasn't expecting to hear the guy from Wings say nigger that much.
Yeah. So, what I wanted to say about that is, like, I really identified with Ben, like, growing up.
Yeah.
And, like, he, like, that really helped me growing up. And just, like, knowing that, like, you know, things got better for people as their life progressed. And then, like, the negative example I wanted to make was, like, I think it affected me more than I want to admit, was Robert Jordan's Wheel of Time. And I want to say, and I like that series, but I think it really impacted me negatively because it's such a they think of the sexes in such a binary way book.
Sure, yeah.
And I think growing up, that imprinted on me more than it should have.
How terrible men are, and how they are—they're all like they're all a half step away from being crazy, especially if they can touch
that exactly. And then just like there's no in between male and female; it's just one or the other.
All the women their power is in manipulation and seduction
and home building and horse magic.
The Aes Sedai stuff, they're all like Bene Gesserit witches. Like, they're all manipulating.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they have no overt power, even though they're fucking wizards.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
And they're still like, the best they can hope for is either to be an Aes Sedai, which are hated and feared, or like their town's wise woman, who is like a motherly figure who never has children and just cares for everyone. Like, it was a weird.
Yeah,
it was definitely. I can see how that would be negatively affecting somebody.
So, like, whatever Robert Jordan's weird, like, sexual hangups, like, those kind of, like, percolated that series a little bit.
He's no Piers Anthony.
No.
At least not when it comes to sexual hangups.
Gen 4.
That's you.
What was question four?
Question four is, what's the geekiest thing you've ever done or said?
It was recent, and I'll tell you what it was. It was for my bar application. Like, you have to list a bunch of character references.
Oh, no.
And they can't be related to you by blood, or they can't be, like, attorneys. And so what I listed was my entire role-playing group.
That's so good, though.
I mean, you have to know these people for a set amount of years.
For sure.
They have to like you.
Even if they don't like you, they know you well enough.
Exactly.
About you. Yeah. That's...
And your strengths, your weaknesses.
They're literally your character references.
Exactly.
That's so terrible.
Like, he's got a high con and a decent whiz.
So that's like the geekiest thing I've done recently. And I had this great, like, image in my mind of, like, the board of legal examiners calling up, like, my D&D references, especially, like, one or two of them, because I love McKaylee, but, like, her giving, like, answers to a board of legal examiners.
Yeah, I know McKaylee.
Just, like, fills me with joy.
My brother was in the Air Force. He got a medical discharge, but before that was happening, he was going to be under some crazy clearance, and he called us and said, I'm going to be under crazy clearance, and they're going to be calling you guys for my references. You are the people I put down because it was supposed to be family and friends. They're going to ask you a lot of questions about shit I've done. I didn't lie, don't lie about me. Which I was like, at the time, I was like, that's weird. And then they were asking questions like, has your brother ever smoked marijuana? And I'm like, oh, and I'm like, yeah. And like, has he ever done, you know, any other drugs? Yeah. Like, and it was like that weird, like, don't lie about me, because like, yeah. I had to be truthful. So like, whatever it is, whatever I've done, it's happened. It's super interesting.
Now I'm wondering if I should send a message to everybody and be like, don't lie.
Just tell the truth. Like, whatever I
That's the main thing that they're looking for. And like, I've told the truth on my application, but if they might be worth pointing out,
because people tend to lie for you when they think they're helping.
Exactly,
right. Is the thing, not for anything else. Yeah,
and not through any malice or anything.
No, they're just the opposite of malice. Mm-hmm. They're trying to be beneficial to you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, Tim. Question five.
All right. Speaking of lying for your benefit, what is your favorite hangover cure? Not that you've ever been drunk in your entire life.
Clearly not.
Yeah. My favorite.
How's that cider?
It's great. It's great. Not enough to get me drunk.
Yeah. I mean, we got more.
Here, I'll take a sip.
You can slam him before you leave.
Drinking on camera.
Yeah.
Great podcasting. Yeah. So in terms of the best hangover cure I had was when I lived in Japan, after we were drunk at the karaoke bar that night, we would go out for breakfast. A lot of the time, we'd just go to the local konbini, and what I always grabbed was the breads that they have with red bean paste. So just in the middle
buns.
Steam buns, red bean paste in the middle, or just like not yet, like melon pan, which is just like melon tasting with like whatever inside, or chocolate covered. I just wanted carbs, and
just
those
get
were delicious.
Some bread to soak it up.
I just wanted bread.
I like that.
Red bean paste is like, there's a lot of things that are super common flavors throughout a lot of Asia, and red bean paste as a kind of treat or sweet flavor is just like the one thing that I just can't.
I found out my cat likes it.
Pickled plums, too.
Oh, that's kind of funny.
Oh, pickled plums are
umeboshi.
Weird. Umeboshi, yeah.
Ugh, so bitter.
Oh.
But
I'd take some umeboshi. I wouldn't take that as a hangover cure, but I'd take some. Yeah, I bought one of those recently just for fun, like one of those red bean paste buns, and my cat was suddenly very interested in it, and I was like, "You are never interested in any food that I have, but you want this thing because she can't eat anything beyond like soft things because she has no teeth." So,
but bean paste she could eat.
She can eat bean paste, and she liked it. So
That's
I was
awesome.
Like, "Okay," and then I was Googling like, "Can cats eat red bean paste?"
Too late. She's dead.
Yep.
Oh, no. That's poor kitty. Japanese. What are you gonna? No, she says meow.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah. You got to put a racism warning on this.
Weeaboo cats. All right. Thank you so much, Joshua. Joshua Humphrey, our lawyer almost friend.
Well, thank you for having me.
Like a recent graduate. Yeah. Thanks for coming on and talking about the law.
I hope you don't get emails being like, that guy, what he said about the law is wrong, these are all the reasons why.
If we did, believe me, if you send us pedantic anti-Joshua law emails, I'm reading them on right now.
When you pass the bar and get your results, are you just going to be like, I am the law?
Yeah.
Like, that's all I could think is, like, Judge Dredd
like
right
a
away.
Mild
I have to be sworn in first.
Sworn in first. Ooh,
and then I'll do that.
I want you to cosplay as Judge Dredd at Convergence next year if you pass the bar.
Ooh.
What are you going to swear in on? What's the deal for
good
that?
Question. I'll look into that.
Let us know, because I'm very interested to know what happens.
Maybe I can figure out what that is now, because the July bar ceremony swearing in is like soon.
Yeah.
So people who pass the July bar are being sworn
Find
in.
Find out what the atheists do.
Oh, that's a good question.
All right. Yeah. Real quick, I have to thank
I think you should use a Dungeon Master's Guide. I'm just saying.
Ooh.
That
was
good one. That's a good one. Which edition, though? I mean.
Oh, it'd probably be a Pathfinder. We play in Pathfinder.
Oh, Pathfinder.
So 3.5.
Yeah.
3.5.
All right. Thank you so much, Joshua. I want to thank a couple of recent Patreon supporters. It was RenFest, and so we got way behind on these. So apologies and thank you for your support to Joe Davis.
Joe Davis, you're the greatest.
And Jen P.
Yeah. Jen P, you are also the greatest.
You guys are amazing, and thank you so much. We only have a few five questions in the hopper. We're looking at about six, so if you want to send in your answers to our five questions, send them to 5questions@geeksithoutgod.com. As always, you can email your angry law emails to any of us, Molly, Nick, or Tim, @geeksithoutgod.com, or just go for whole hog and do all.
And I think dick pics at geekswithoutgod.com still goes to Jeffrey Brown.
That's kind of amazing.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for supporting and listening. Please follow us on Facebook and like us on Twitter, or scratch that and reverse it. Rate us on iTunes and Stitcher. Do all the things. Tell your friends to listen to our show. We really appreciate anything you do.
We appreciate. We really do.
We're going to appreciate it. I can't tell you how much we appreciate it. I spilled a bunch of wine on Tim's very old receipts here. So.
Aren't that old? These are festival time.
These are from like, right. They're like at least a month away.
September
All right.
5th.
September 5th is super old. All right. Thank you guys so much, and we'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Oh, and he's got the most beautiful name. I never realized. Joshua. Ah, Josh.
Ooh, wow. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks. Geeks Without God.
Need more Geeks Without God? Go to our website, read our blog posts, find us on Facebook, or follow us on Twitter at Geeks Without God. Social media!
We're geeks. We're geeks. We're geeks without God. We're geeks. We're geeks. We're geeks without God. We're geeks. Geeks Without God.
If anybody wants to do a podcast about anything, it's Bill Stitler.